White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 357.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com. and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we had a 6 hour and 1 minute game on Saturday. I don't think that's how any of us really expected to watch the Southern Mississippi game. And it turned out that, because, you know, there were several other good games on that evening, and I kind of missed, it's funny, I missed, like, at least the first half of most of them, and by the time our game was over, I was just kind of sick of football and lost all my enthusiasm, so I didn't watch anything else. So it wasn't what you call the most optimal college football Saturday, and during that 6 hours, in addition to 3 hours of not football, we got 3 hours of not great football. So, all told, it was kind of a weird Saturday. What was your experience with it?
It was a weird Saturday. That's the first extended weather delay we've ever had, as far as I know. And it made it weird, especially because at the beginning it wasn't really threatening in Auburn. But also then it was just kind of, you don't know when it's going to be over. It was at that point, I just, like, you know, paused the DVR and I left the house. I went and got a pizza, brought it home. We ate dinner.
You had plenty of time, you know, to go. You could have made a pizza, baked it in.
Weird part was, if you turn on the Auburn radio network during the delay, they were playing the audio replay of the Washington game. So really? I turned it on, and I'm not sure what's happening. I hear the two guys calling it, and Stan's describing some play, and I'm like, oh my God, did they start back and I'm missing it? And like, no, it was the Washington game.
Well, what I did during the weather delay was I was on Twitter, and I happened across Brandon Marcello doing his live video streaming thing from his phone while they were sitting there in the press box. And so I was enjoying just, you know, listening to him and his partner there just riffing on whatever and reading comments and stuff. But also, I kind of realized partway through it that it was indispensable and I couldn't turn it off, even if I'd wanted to. I didn't want to. I was enjoying it. But I couldn't really turn it off because that's the only way I was going to know when it was on, because as it turned out, DirecTV, we have the SEC alternate channel, like 611-1 or something on DirecTV, but they didn't show it. And so when I realized that the game was back on by basically just listening to 2 hours of Brandon cutting up, when I realized it was back on, I first brought it up on the iPad and then streamed at the TV, and it looked terrible, and it was in a box inside a box and everything. And so finally I just, when they got to halftime, I guess I just went to the app on the Apple TV. But the funny thing was, when we did that, it didn't show halftime. The entire halftime, they just showed a blank screen that said, your game is now at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, why not just leave the camera on and let us see the band or something or whatever they were doing? Why just go to a blank screen that says you're at halftime? That just seemed weird. Clearly, they've got cameras there. Did they have some rule that says you can't show halftime?
No, because a lot of times on a game that's purposefully on, you know, on online only, mm-hmm. and not on the SEC network or whatever, they'll show the whole halftime. They'll show both bands a lot of times. So
how were you able to see it? What channel or what service did you have?
I mean, I have Comcast, so I started out watching on the, you know, the SEC network, and but then I knew that we don't get the SEC network alternate, or I don't get it in HD. So then I had the same thing. I went to the Apple TV, went to the ESPN app, and watched it there, and it was fun.
Yeah,
I don't like it because I can't pause it and rewind and stuff, but it was fun.
Yeah, it was just we had no way of knowing it wasn't going to be on the channel on DirecTV. We have that channel; they just weren't showing it on DirecTV. So yeah, it was kind of a, and at the end of it all, you're like, was it really even worth it? I'm not sure it was worth all that much trouble. You know, here we are treating it like it's the national championship game, and we're desperately trying to find it on TV. And when you finally get there, you're like, I could have done something else than watch this.
Well, and speaking of doing something else, I asked people on Twitter what they did during the delay, and I have some good answers here for
you. You got deluged. Yeah, you got deluged. Go ahead. Tell us what you got.
All right. First, Jay Glover said, left the stadium, then campus, then got Guthrie's, and now enjoying it in a location on the northwest side of Auburn where there is no rain. Josh Dubs had cleaned up a nasty diaper.
Oh, well, that's. I think that was probably preferable to some of the second half.
Emily Rios said, fixed a Batman robot for my boys.
Oh, there you go. There's a good use of your time right there.
That's it.
I don't know what a Batman robot is, but it sounds cool.
Walt said, sitting on the couch about to cook burgers and watch Georgia Southern.
Yeah,
sounds like good use of your time.
He'd have been doing that anyway.
This is true. Josh Corbett says, made tacos and watched Tennessee and Georgia. Mm-hmm. One guy said, watched Oklahoma Baylor. Mm-hmm. Tiger Finn says, I went to Jack's and the manager assured me that Auburn's offensive line would be okay. several people said watched more of the Vandy-Tennessee State game than they planned to or ever wanted to,
right. Yeah, that battle for supremacy in Nashville became much more visible than anybody expected before it started. That's funny. I got to tell you, Brandon, it was like people were – Brandon wasn't encouraging this, but you could do little comments at the bottom of his screen while he and the young lady with him were talking. Did you see any of his thing?
I did not, but I heard good stuff about it.
Well, it was just that people kept coming up with – I contributed some too. And by the way, I appreciate all the shout-outs when I popped up in there. People were like, hey, man, it's Van, man. That was really cool. But what was funny to me was people were suggesting what was happening because it was so long. So like I said Booby Whitlow's shoulder is going to be healed and he'll be ready to play when we come back. And they were like, you know, like Jared Stidham's going to use up all of his remaining eligibility before we come back, you know. And there were just a bunch of really funny bits of I should have written them down, but of what all that, because it was taking so long, you know. So, you know, Anders Carlson will be a senior before the game starts back or all this kind of stuff. Now you asked the question here. It's a good one. What kind of an impact did that delay have on the game? Because from what I've seen from the reports afterward, the coaches felt like it had an impact.
I felt like it had an impact. I mean, Auburn fans don't want to hear this. I get that. But I truly feel like the game had an that the delay had an impact on how the two teams played. Because two things. Number one, before the weather delay, Auburn's defense was absolutely destroying them in those series leading up to the delay.
Right.
Just the defense had their foot on Southern Miss's throat, basically. Mm-hmm. And after the delay, they got a few things going. And secondly, the offense had their best drive of the day, leading to a touchdown right before the delay. And then we were getting the ball back again after Southern Miss went 3-and-out, and that's when the delay happened.
And when we came back, we punted twice. So yeah,
right. So I really think like the offense had just had some success. And you know, and we had them a little off balance, and maybe there was a little confidence building. So I really think in a sense that delay hurt us. And I think that delay hurt us another way too. Like I don't know this, but I really believe that, you know, both of our tackles left the games with injuries. And I got to think that the condition the field was in at the end had something to do with that.
It couldn't have helped.
I
did see that Darius Slayton was lamenting that he said some of the players took their pads off immediately, and he didn't because I think he thought they were going to go right back out there, you know, mm-hmm. in a few minutes. And he said after like 3 hours, he said, I was really feeling dumb because everybody else was comfortable and I'm sitting there with my pads on. So, I mean, you kind of didn't know what to – that was the main thing, was the uncertainty. You know, it was that you didn't know how long it was going to be. So you're waiting around. And then as soon as you came back in, you did like two drives and had to go back to halftime.
That's it. My kids all did, two of the three of them did swim team. And when you do swim team in the summertime, you know, where we live, there's a lot of thunderstorms. So there's a lot of weather delays. Anytime lightning is sighted anywhere nearby, they have to stop the swimming. It's the same rule where mm-hmm. if anybody sees any, whatever, it's 30 minutes and they reset the clock. And so I've been to a lot of like these events where everybody sits and waits for the weather. And it was very reminiscent of that to me.
Oh, wow. Well, I did see that somebody pointed out that the SEC policy on that was basically created by Auburn. And it really went back to the West Virginia famous rain game, that the SEC liked how Auburn handled that and adopted it as the conference-wide standard.
We're responsible by that kind of stuff, and I mean, I get it. We don't, you know. My younger brother and I were joking, you know, texting each other during the delay about how, you know, in the old days, we didn't make a big deal about this lightning stuff. If you got hit with lightning, you didn't make a big deal about
it. Rub some dirt on it.
Rub some dirt on it. Keep going. Don't bother the whole stadium with it, you know. So it's I get it. We're trying to be safe. And I think that's one of the things. This would be a good question for Reynolds Wolf is,
yes,
I believe that we have much better data now about lightning strikes than we did 10 years ago, and that enables us to enact this kind of policy more accurately.
I wish that I had thought to check with Reynolds about this, and maybe if he usually listens, maybe he can send us an email or an audio clip or something where he can just like give us a lowdown on what, you know, just on what we what he thinks about all this, because clearly they are trying to be safer with things like this than they used to be. And I'm just curious if he thinks, you know, is this sufficient? Should they do more? Are they doing too little? Did they consult with any actual, you know, people like him before they came up with the policy? I'm just curious his thoughts on it. I wish I'd thought to ask him before now, but we'll see for next week maybe if we can get some comments from him about it. All right, so that's the weather, but this isn't Auburn weather. This is Auburn football. So let's move along here. We got to talk about the Southern Miss game, but I think that what's been on everybody's mind already, and all this game did was make it more obvious, is that we've got issues. We've got issues on offense, and you know, watching Detroit Lions highlights and seeing Kerryon Johnson.
Kerryon, my wayward son.
Watching Kerryon blow through NFL defenses and truck guys into the end zone as he's been doing, it makes me wonder, you know, where did our power running game go? Because Kerryon Johnson, I'm afraid, is not walking through that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And Trey Mason is not walking through that door, and Cameron Artis Payne is not walking through that door. And you know, we're left with what we have. Now, this is another one of those weird things like with Rock Thomas, where I'm going, I thought we have 4- and 5-star running backs. It's like we go to the store and we purchase products that we think are really, really good, have great, you know, like we go on Amazon and we order these things and they're like 5-star reviews and everybody says, oh, this is the best product. And it arrives and you're kind of going, I'm not sure this is the best one, you know. So we get these great running backs in and then we kind of look at our our shelf full of running backs and we go, you know, we've got like the little speed guy, and we've got the other speed guy, and we got the tall guy, but where's the Trey Mason? Where's the Kerryon Johnson here?
I think the issue is that the guys that we have that are good enough to be SEC running backs are all too young, basically. And Cam Martin is, you know, fine as a complimentary back. We know what he is at this point. And we'll talk about it. He was valiant in that game. But, I mean, you have to look – it's like we did with the quarterback thing last year. You have to look back, you know, the past couple of classes ago. Well, what happened? Who yes. should be the older – Mm-hmm. experienced running backs who are playing. And as an example, the main tailback they took last year was 2 years ago in 2000 in the signing class before last was Devin Barrett.
Yes, and he's not a receiver.
He's
a defensive back.
He's a defensive back who doesn't play.
He's Rudy Ford.
Yeah, except Rudy Ford turned into a really good safety at the end. So, in the class before that, we took Malik Miller, and we took Steven Davis Jr., who ended up leaving and then eventually going to South Carolina.
I don't know why they don't like Malik Miller. I mean, every time he goes in, he seems like he does okay, and he gets like two or three carries, and then he goes back on the shelf again. He's a senior, isn't he? I mean, he was Kerryon Johnson.
I believe so.
He was Kerryon.
I think he was redshirted, so he may be
a redshirt junior. But he was Kerryon Johnson's blocking fullback at Madison or wherever in high school. And Kerryon is gone, and he's still here, and he's a big guy. And if we're looking for a big power guy, I mean, couldn't he possibly be kind of like the next Petway?
Yeah, I mean, I think. You know, it's like some of these other positions we've talked about. I think if they'd have looked at this honestly, they'd have said, we probably, you know, and this is where you get to the ego thing with their players. What they should have done probably is gone and gotten a JUCO running back who was like 240 pounds, who could be a between the tackles, you know, 40 yards a carry guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No great top end speed, but a guy that you could throw in against SEC teams and plug along.
On third and two.
That's it. We could use that guy badly right now.
We don't have a third and two back.
Those guys are out there. So, but I think they're probably worried, if we take him, you know, we're getting Asa Martin and these other guys, and they might not all come, or somebody will transfer out or whatever.
So they try to turn Whitlow into that. And he was doing
Whitlow is a redshirt freshman. Mm-hmm. So I mean, football wise, he is a freshman.
Yes.
So I mean, he was a small school guy who played multiple positions and didn't play primarily running back last year. And I think I honestly believe really that a year from now, 2 years from now, Whitlow and Asa Martin, we're going to be fine. And when Shivers, I think, you know, 2 years from now, those three guys, we're going to be tearing people up in the running game with those guys. But I think the problem is right now, there's nobody who's a junior or senior who's physically developed and is big enough and knows the offensive stuff who can do it. So I think Asa Martin has the size, but I don't think they trust him. I think they think he's going to fumble. I don't think they clearly don't trust Malik Miller, even though he made a great play in that screen pass late in that game. Mm-hmm. A little dump off pass. So it's what it is. Hmm. To me, you went straight to the running backs. I think the offensive line is equally a gigantic problem.
Oh, absolutely. At least.
And maybe more of the problem than the running backs, but it's clearly the kind of thing where if this team had Kerryon Johnson, it would be okay, because he's good enough that he would make a bad offensive line look okay. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And they would have more confidence in what they were doing because he was so good. But I think it's a kind of thing where you know, if we had more of a Rudy Johnson type who could run over people, it would be okay. And if we had more of a, you know, a Kerryon type who could make people miss, it would be okay. But we don't have either one of those. So, and the offensive line is bad. I mean, it is not good.
No.
And I think that you want to tell, it would go back to the same thing with the recruiting where, you know, we ought to have a better offensive line than this. I think, I mean, we had some injuries in the offseason, and I think that hampers some guys they thought would be good players, like Brahms and Troxell. But at the same time, you know, like Mike Horton is a guy that played some last year and I thought would be a good player, but he's been not good this year. And, you know, center has been pretty darn weak. And Harrell, I think, is a good player. He played well down the stretch. He played well against Georgia and Alabama last year. But I think he's banged up right now. So he's the other guard and he's not playing well. So when you're getting poor play from the two guards in the center, it's freaking tough to run the ball, especially in this offense where a lot of times we're trying to pull one of those guards. Mm-hmm. They're not getting out there, you know. You made the joke about Kerryon walking through the door, but I'd give a lot for Braden Smith to walk through the door right now.
No kidding.
Because he was a road grader at guard, and he was really good, you know, either going straight ahead or and sometimes in pulling and getting guys. So, we don't have that right now. And I think, you know, and it's a cascading thing, okay, because right. The offensive line's bad and the running backs are young. And so I think those two things combine to make the running game bad, but then the offensive line's bad. So that Stidham already has a problem we know about that he gets, you know, skittish. He starts looking down at the and he starts, you know, running even before the rush is doing anything. Mm-hmm. And I think he has no confidence in this offensive line at all. None. And so the minute he, you know, the clock in his head goes about a second and a half and then it goes ding and he's like, I'm out of here.
Yep.
And whether the rush is there or not. And I think it's that leads to a lot of bad plays and a lot of him missing open guys. Where if he hung tough in the pocket, he could make some of those throws and it wouldn't be so bad.
His accuracy does seem to have suffered, and I don't understand it exactly. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and that's true. But even when he doesn't have pressure, it seems like he can't hit his targets.
It's true. I mean, his accuracy is not the same. Some of that, I believe some of that is – you know, the injury and him missing spring practice and not having as much time with the players is my feeling about it. But you're right, the accuracy is not the same.
Part of this, too, is that problem we've always had and we've talked about it. I mean, we have it in years when we don't have a great – like we've got great – we have great players at a lot of areas on the team right now. But one problem Auburn always has is it's very – and that's true of most teams – but very rarely do we have really good players at every position. I mean, only Alabama ever seems to do that with their uncanny, you know, years and years of number one recruiting classes or whatever. But so I don't want to fall into that trap of if we're not Alabama, we're garbage, because that would mean that there's 119 teams or whatever, you know, that are garbage, and that's ridiculous. You just have one team that's able to get anybody they want, and it makes everybody else look worse, and I understand that. But that being said, it's particularly frustrating when we have everything else just about except for one area. But it's true that in the years that we were pulling in, you know, supposedly great running backs and this great defensive line and these great linebackers and all of that and these great receivers, in the last 3 or 4 years we've been pulling in all that, and the one thing we haven't been able to get consistently is, except for Calvin Ashley, and of course he's our latest five-star that's slow developing, is we haven't been able to get a bunch, you know, in a numbers sense, of really good offensive linemen. And, you know, we can talk about whose fault that is. Is it Gus? Is it the assistant coaches? Is it going from our current guy to Hand and back to him again? But the fact is, you know, we recruited something like four offensive linemen out of high school in the last 3 years or something. The numbers have just been bad. I mean, if we hadn't brought in the guy from UMass, think where we would be. If we hadn't, you realize that at least one or two of our current guys were defensive linemen that were moved, that were converted over. So, you know, if you look at how many offensive linemen that were 4 or 5 star offensive linemen in high school we have right now, it's like 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Especially when you compare it to like the defensive line the last couple of years where we had guys sitting on the bench.
We should be 3 per year coming in there.
Yeah. Problem. Yeah. And it's just, you know, you start thinking, well, what's the problem there? Why can't we recruit everything else? But we can't seem to recruit offensive linemen. It's just, and to want to play in this offense with year after year, 1,000-yard running backs and Jarrett Stidham and everything. I mean, you'd think that they'd be lining up to play offensive linemen for Auburn. I don't understand it. So,
and I think, and that, like, I didn't understand that after, like, Robinson went high in the draft. I thought that would encourage people to, come out. So
I don't know.
The other piece is outside of the, even this is the thing, other thing that drives me crazy. Okay. Even with the talent, the problems with their offensive line, the problems with the running backs, the problem with Stidham, even with all that, part of the problem is execution. And I know fans don't want to hear this. Like they want to shoot somebody. I get that.
That's not the execution they're interested in, right?
I understand that. But it is the reality that, you know, on offense, 11 guys all have to do their job 100% right for the play to work. And if one guy does his job halfway right, the play fails, and it sometimes looks terrible, even if 10 guys are doing the right thing.
Right.
And what happens is you got a bunch of guys on Auburn who are, you know, one out of 10 plays, they're screwing up. Well, then you got 11 guys. That's happening every play. And it is. So it's, and I get it. That's the coach's responsibility to clean that stuff up. But sometimes I think it's guys who are kind of, you know, overreacting because they feel like things are not working and they're under pressure and they're trying to get things done and so I ran some numbers today. I went back and looked at every time we had the ball on offense this season, okay? And I didn't look at the Alabama State game because that, I mean, to be honest, it does not matter.
Right.
Against Division I teams, and I didn't count like when we had the ball at the end of the game and knelt down or at the end of the half and knelt down. But so take those things out and take out the Alabama State game. We've had the ball 48 times on offense this year, okay? Out of those 48 times, 30 of those 48 times, we either had a penalty, a sack, a tackle for loss, or we turned the ball over. Okay?
Holy crap.
30 of 48. Something bad happened.
That's okay? Not – that is unbelievable and totally unacceptable.
Right. So, those things – you could say it's talent or whatever else, but some of those things are just execution, like block the guy you're supposed to. Don't get a negative play. And here's what that means in terms of the impact of that. So on the 18 drives that we have where nothing bad happened, okay, on those 18 drives, we scored 61% of the time. On the 30 drives where bad stuff happened, we scored 33% of the time. So I get it, and there's talent, and there's with the offensive line, the running backs, the Stidham looking down on that, but some of it is we have those problems and we're shooting ourselves in the foot every other play.
Wow.
And so I think it's that piece, like if we could eliminate the penalties and the screw ups that lead to tackles for losses and some of those are on, you know, the running backs or Stidham or whoever too. But if you take away the screw up pieces that lead to those, not the good defensive plays, but the screw ups that lead to penalties and tackles for losses, then we would be in a much better place. Even with the players that we have against the teams that we have played, we would be in a much better place.
Now there you go. I mean, yeah, it's absolutely frustrating. They just that this far into the season that they're still struggling like that. And why is that? What do you see as like the main? I'm sure there's a lot of different contributing factors, right?
I mean, I think, you know, guys on the offensive line continually screwing up. I think penalties. You know, we had 7 penalties on the offense in the first half the other day.
Mm.
The first half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just like pulling the gun out, blowing your toes off time after time. And I think it doesn't matter how good the talent is at these other positions. When you do that, when you put yourself back and you get negative yards, the drive has a much lower chance of succeeding.
And it seems to happen a lot, like right on the 25-yard line, you know, too. It's not mm-hmm. like it's happening yeah. on their side of the field or whatever. It always seems to happen at the very beginning of the drive and put us back in the hole.
And I need to go back and do this. I didn't, but I think 4 or 5 of those drives that were clean drives that we scored on,
mm-hmm.
We started at the other team's like 15-yard line.
Oh,
or
I don't
because
doubt
the defense or special teams. So
that's what I call the 2006 effect. I mean, remember in 2006 that was the very end of the Al Borges era. And more or less, and it was to the point where we could not manufacture an 80-yard drive. We had a good defense, and so we were winning games like 14-7 that year, and the 14 would come on the 2 times that we would recover a fumble or intercept the other team on their 20-yard line. And our drives, I promise, it may not be as quite as exaggerated as it seems to me in my memory, but if one of you numbers guys wants to go back and look at 2006, you will be shocked at how many times our scoring drives in 06 were like 25-yard drives, and that's kind of how I feel this year.
That's my proposal for our offense going forward.
Yeah, it's rely on special teams and field position
and the defense.
And turnovers, yeah. Well, I prefer what I suggested on Twitter today is we go to like the Big 12 style where we just throw the ball all over the field in short passes and don't even pretend to have a power running game, you know, like kind of like Oklahoma 15 years ago or more, or like the Mike Leach approach.
Yes, I mean you could do that. I mean we could 100% be effective with that. The big key is the short passing game.
Yeah,
the controlled, accurate, and Southern Miss was doing some of that to us. I mean we've seen teams do that to us. We've seen Ole Miss do that to us a little bit. We saw you know Oklahoma do that to us painfully. So I think it's there. It's doable. I think Stidham and the receivers could do that.
What if you put Mike Leach and his staff in charge of Jarrett Stidham, these receivers, even with this offensive line and these running backs, they would score points, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, they would.
They would light it up. Mike Leach would salivate at the mouth at the thought of having Seth and
Schwartz
and, oh, my gosh, are you kidding? And Slayton and these other guys. Ryan Davis.
I mean, I think the big thing that Southern Miss said is we are not going to let Ryan Davis beat us.
That's what I was going to ask you. I didn't see him nearly as much this game as I did against Arkansas. What happened?
They double teamed him.
Did they? Okay.
They said, okay, do it. We know you can't run the ball against us, so we're going to double team this one guy think is really dangerous. The rest of you, do what you can do.
Yep.
And he's Stidham, and I think it's big because he's Stidham's security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Stidham's go-to guy, and they were all over him. And I think that's going to be the go that we have to make teams not do that.
I'm glad that other teams we play later this year won't think to do that. Oh, wait. You think Alabama might figure that out? You think Georgia might figure that out? You think Jimbo might figure that out? Oh, man. So we've got to have these other guys step up now. We have to. Well, sorry. So I'm advocating option B, the short passing game. You're advocating option C, play to the defense, slow down, ball control, field position. Nobody's advocating stay the course, option A.
I want to suggest this, and I almost don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it. Part of me thinks that they have been working on some stuff on the offense, and Gus is doing the old, like, just he knows he's going to need it for the Mississippi State games. He's been just like, we're keeping the good stuff over here. We're not going to use it in these two games because we know we're going to win anyway. And so the offense has right. some stuff they know is going to work, but they're not putting it out there. And if you – now, I – that's probably not correct. I know we say stuff.
I don't have facts to back this up.
But if you see some stuff, some suddenly miraculously effective offensive stuff against Mississippi State, I just want you to keep this in the back of your mind, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
That this would be a very Gussy kind of thing to do.
Well, it's kind of like he's been setting up the other play besides the run up the middle on second and short for like 6 years now. Right, we've talked about this forever, that we're still waiting to see what he's diabolically setting up. I'm just afraid that he'll retire of old age before he ever actually runs that other play he's been setting up all these years on second and short when they go to hurry up. I can't wait to see what it is. I've been so excited ever since 2013. I've been like, oh, here it comes. Here it comes, John. No, it's still run up the middle. Well, they're still setting it up, man. It's 2015 now. They're still setting it up.
When he pulls the trigger on that, it's really going to fool him.
Oh, John, when he pulls the trigger, it's going to be.
And I say you.
Oh, man. Sometime in 2027 when he pulls. Well, he ain't going to be. Someday.
I want to elaborate on what I was proposing with the option C thing, though, because I really think this is so anti-ethical to Gus, because what I'm saying is, we have a great defense. Your job is not to screw it up for them.
Well,
okay. Don't turn the ball over. Milk the play clock as long as possible.
Yeah.
I already think that they are. I really believe this. I already think part of the issue with Jared is they're already telling him, just don't turn it over and we'll win.
So basically, he's turning into
gunslinger kind of Jared. Yeah. From the late last year is being kind of corralled down a little bit.
So Gus is basically turning himself into the very reason he didn't want to be under Chizik anymore.
Yes. It's
oh, my gosh.
It's a kind of bizarre psychological loop here.
So I want to be able to run my offense full throttle. I don't want to do this slow it down and depend on the defense. So I'm gonna leave, go off to Arkansas State, show how that works so Auburn can hire me back and I can go and do exactly what Chizik was doing.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
What the hell is the world coming to?
Well, in other news, we did play Southern Mississippi, and I don't know how much we really want to talk about it. The game is just a jumbled mess in my brain. I have no mental sense of all I know is I recorded like 5 hours of video and still didn't get the whole game on my DVR. I have no recollection. I'm gonna need somebody to go through and like War Room Eagle and chop it down to something I can watch in 15 minutes, because I usually have a pretty good through narrative of Auburn football games when they're over. And I know we scored a couple of times. I know Southern Mississippi looked competent for a few minutes here and there. And otherwise, I couldn't tell you a dang thing about this game.
I think a big point was, you know, Whitlow getting hurt.
Yes.
When he came out of the game, the running game really suffered. And I mentioned this earlier, I want to say it. Like, Cam Martin stepped up in after that and played a lot of snaps. He ran the ball very hard. He stayed in to pass protect and got annihilated a couple times.
He did.
And again, holding one time too. But
he
ran the ball very hard inside and outside, and he wasn't always super effective, but he was effective enough to win the game. And I thought he, we've asked, like, when are they going to give him a chance to just do it if they keep, you know, saying he's the number one guy or whatever? And they did in this game. They didn't have a choice.
No.
But they did it. Like, they said, you know, you're the guy. We don't have anybody else that, you know, which is, I honestly, like, as an Auburn fan, the tailback thing at that point, a little bit, I was having like Georgia 2017 flashbacks, and I want to bang my head in the desk just saying that. But if Whitlow doesn't play this week or next week or the week after, you know, we got to really reevaluate who we're going to play at that position.
Well, you know who's got the best numbers that's gotten more than a handful of carries so far of the running backs?
Who, Shivers?
Shivers, yeah.
Sometimes he makes plays, but also you can't run him
no
straight ahead into an SEC defense. Not now.
No. He may be like Trey in 2011 versus Trey in 2013.
Yes, I think again, a year from now, 2 years from now, he's going to be so awesome and so fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But I think right now he could be a gadget play kind of guy, but he can't be an every down tailback. I really don't think so.
I agree. But I'm not sure Cam Martin can either. I mean, I think we really just have to – we even more than before, because we talked before the season started that this could be a year where we do a lot of, committee running back. And and then Whitlow kind of tried to step forward, and now it may be if he's hurt, depending on how he is, it may be that we have to do that. It may be that that's the only thing that will work because none of these running backs look like they're going to get more than a few carries each.
Yep.
We don't have a workhorse right now. Even Whitlow is not, you know, a 20-something carry a game guy. It doesn't seem. I mean, he has been, but I'm not sure that's how you want to use him. As you said, he's a freshman basically. So, what did you think about the receivers in this game?
I mean, we had that one great, amazing play from Seth Williams at the goal line where he went up over a guy. People were comparing him to Randy Moss and
he
stuff.
He wasn't like, as open as the other receiver, and yet he took the ball away. Yeah.
When you see him do that, you're like, I mean, and we saw this last week when we were at the game.
Mm-hmm.
He's gigantic.
Yeah.
Like when he lines up in the slot, he is so much bigger than the guys who lined him up against. We need to do this to him. I mean, here's the question for you, okay? Right now, let's say Whitlow can't play. Who are the two or three or four guys that you're going to build your offense around? Let's say Whitlow can't play. Who are the two or three or four guys you're going to build your offense around for the rest of the season?
I mean, what I'm advocating is we throw the ball almost every play, including to the running backs. I mean, because I think that Cam Martin – is more effective, and I know that our fullback, our H-back.
Chandler Cox.
Chandler Cox. I know that they are both more effective catching the ball out of the backfield than they are running right up the middle.
Yes.
And so I want Stidham throwing the ball almost every play. And whether that's short passes, but dumps into the flat, or down the field.
No down the field.
I feel like you've got to spread it around to all those guys, fairly short intermediate passes.
Yeah. Like what? I mean, again, other screens, draws, passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, just doop, 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 doop. Yeah. Guys crossing and cutting back stuff.
My kingdom for a crossing route. We don't do
so,
it.
No, but I mean, Seth Williams, Schwartz, Ryan Davis.
Absolutely.
You know,
those are all big time, you know, I don't know what stars they were coming out of high school, but right now those are 5-star players. You need to get them the dang ball.
Yes, we need. I mean, I know they're freshmen, but we need to get the ball to Schwartz and Seth Williams. If the other team is going to focus on taking away, you know, Ryan Davis all the time, then those are the two guys we need to get the ball to.
And Stidham needs to throw the ball. I mean, these need to be like 2-second, you know, snap the ball, one, two, gone. There can't be any of this surveying the field, looking around. No.
And I think, especially in Seth Williams' cases, just throw it up. You know what I'm saying? And I think we should do the same thing with Cano a little bit after we saw the Washington game. Just throw it up and let them go get the ball sometimes.
And other teams.
He's not perfectly open. Just do it.
Other teams can do this with less talent than we have.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams do this all the time with lesser quarterbacks and lesser receivers. We know we can do it. Just do it.
Yes. But this comes back to the question I put at the end of this offense thing. I think what you're proposing here, I think it would work. And I think your Mike Leach question was a valid one. I think the question is, can Gus win in a different way?
Right.
And I think what you're saying is like don't even Mike Leach, like take a different coach, you know, whoever. You should play to the strength of your team, and the strength of our team is clearly the receivers on offense. We've got to have them carry the load, and if you know, the more they can do, the better it's going to make it for everybody else. So
that's it.
I don't know. All right, and I would go back to like the speed. I would have one of those guys coming across on the speed sweep every play. I would have Schwartz or whoever running across the formation every play.
Yeah.
And running him as much as I run the tailbacks. Just
yes. Who was the team that was doing that? There was a team.
LSU did it last year, LSU. Like every other play.
Yeah, but there was a team I just saw. I know it. There was a team just this past weekend that was doing that where they didn't have a real running back threat, and so they were using the receiver sweep thing as basically their running attack, and it was working pretty well because they were getting him around the corner and into, you know, where the receivers were blocking for him, and, you know, basically you turn it into like a little bubble screen, basically. I mean, that's what it turns into.
Yes.
By the time the guy gets out there around the gets past the end, he's basically a receiver who's caught a very, very, very short pass and turned into a bubble screen. So yeah, it all amounts to the same thing. I remember, you know, I had a football simulation game years ago where you could draw up the plays. The only thing you couldn't do was like all the motion before the snap. And so basically the instruction said, you know, if you're wanting to do all that, then position your players where they're going to be at the snap and start from there. And so basically, you know, you're just changing the point of the ball transferring. Other than that, it's the same type of play, you know. So let me see. We didn't talk about the defense a little bit. You said this is the best. You say in all capital letters here in our show notes, this is the best defense in college football. Is that true?
It is true.
Elaborate.
First of all, from an advanced statistics perspective, like Bill Conley's S&P Plus, he ranks all defense according to the plays, but also based on who you play, but also how well you played. And Auburn is the number one defense of college football in those advanced statistics.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a true statement. But I think it's also like I wouldn't trade our defense for any defense of college football. I mean, Alabama, Georgia, Washington, LSU, Clemson, anybody. I wouldn't trade our defense for any of those. This is a great, great defense. It's the best defense Auburn has had in years. And their problems with the offense are so dramatic that everybody has kind of lost their minds and lost sight of how good the defense is. And it makes me mad, honestly. Because I love defense, and this defense is awesome, and we don't appreciate it. All everybody does is fuss about the offense. They don't talk about how great the defense is, and we are so spoiled by how good this defense is that somebody on the other team makes a freaking miracle third down conversion, and everybody's like, oh, here we go again. They are like, oh, they're going to go. They went 2 of 13 on third down the other night, and one of them was like that miracle third down conversion they got on the first drive of the game.
Yeah.
And they didn't get another one for like 4 hours.
Literally.
They rushed for 45 yards the other night on 21 attempts, okay? They threw the ball for 215 yards, and that was, you know, every time they threw the ball, a lot of times a guy caught it, and he was tackled instantly, like a yard or two down, you know, it's from the line of scrimmage. So the tackling is outstanding. I think guys are well coached. They're in position. They play hard. We have a lot of talent. We have a lot of depth at every position. We have young guys come in and making plays. You know, Christian Tutt and Sherwood and Newkirk and these other guys are making plays. And I think – this is the thing. Like, this is what I was talking earlier about. Can Gus win another way? This is a team that has a good enough defense and really good special teams that we just have to not be bad on offense. We don't have to be good. We don't have to be 2013, 2010. And I think Auburn fans, you know, at this point can only conceive of a Gus team that, like 2013, where we're destroying everybody in offense, or last year at the end. Mm. Like, we just have to be not bad on offense and we will be fine. This is the part that drives me crazy. Everybody acts like the team is terrible. Mm. The offense is bad. The team is not bad because the defense is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's, and some of it is a rock, paper, scissors thing. We talked about this before with who you play and stuff. But I'm going to tell you what. The teams that want to line up and run the ball straight at us, we're going to be fine against them.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say about the defense. And again, like I thought the delay hurt the defense. I think they played worse after they came out in the rain delay, and Southern Miss made a couple plays that, you know, guys slipping and falling down and stuff. So.
I just don't want to waste this defense. Nothing aggravates me more than
I
years,
agree with that.
Than years where one unit is great and the other is crap, and it ends up being a mediocre season. I mean, 2014 was the opposite. We had this great offense and a crap defense the second half of the season, and now we've got the defense great and the offense has gone to crap. And it just, it's extremely frustrating that we can't ever seem to hit on all cylinders at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the 2010 team, the secondary was terrible. We'd give up 21 points in the first quarter every game that year to passing, you know.
I mean, this is the thing that kills me. Like, we used to give up a 75-yard pass once a quarter.
Yeah.
And you'd have the Auburn defenders look at each other and say, was that your guy? Where they missed the dive and missed the tackles and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they, now, like, if a guy gets a first down, people are upset. So I just, like, we are so spoiled by how good this defense is. And I just want you to appreciate it, like, how good they are, how good Deshaun Davis is, Darrell Williams, Derek Brown. They have real, and just, you know, they've been outstanding.
Let's see. We have, did you have something else you wanted to do about the expectations, or we covered that, or where are we?
One or two more things about.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We when you take out the Alabama State game, we are 13th in the SEC in yards per play on offense. So
jeez.
That we are behind Tennessee and Vanderbilt.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Dang it, I don't have it. I have a clip for that, as you can imagine. I don't know where it is.
While you're looking,
additionally,
we're not just that we're not, I talked earlier about the mistakes, and we're not efficient. So efficiency is like getting like 3, 4, 5 yards every play, but also we're not explosive. We don't get any big plays on offense. We had a couple of big pass plays. We have not had a rushing play greater than 30 yards this season.
Well, this is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth?
I'm coming to join you, honey, with a terrible offense. I'm coming with a terrible offense and a great defense is being wasted, honey. Oh.
Anyhow, it's I think a lot of Auburn fans are like, oh, the offense is so terrible, we'll never win another game. And I don't think that's true. You know, but we'll see.
Well, we're gonna see when we're gonna talk about Mississippi State, because I have a little hope there coming up here in a second.
Okay.
Well, let's hear Jared's contribution this week. Jared, the yard sale artist and our art director here at White Rocket, he contributes every week his interpretation of our most recent game as seen through superhero battles, and we've been enjoying these. And they put a lot of production extra value into it with his he's got his own production team that spruces him up. So let's see what he has to say about the Southern Miss 6-hour and 1-minute game.
Hello, Van and John and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade with your Auburn University superhero battles. This week, Auburn University took on Southern Miss. Auburn looked like Magnus the Robot Fighter, and Southern Miss looked like the villain typeface. Who is Magnus the Robot Fighter and what are his powers? I don't really know. I'm just pretty certain he should be able to beat Typeface in a battle that no one should ever care about. And that's it for this week. I've been Jared Albrecht from the Long Box Crusade, and I'd like to give a big shout out to Pat Sampson, DJ Christados, who does the edits for this and owns the actual eagle that closes out the soundbite. War Eagle, Van and John.
It galls me just a little bit that he has a better sound effect than any of my 70 on my soundboard here. But I gotta say, I like Magnus Robot Fighter because as one of my friends in graduate school used to say, that was a big comics guy, he read him every month and he would say, well, he's this guy and he fights robots. Well, there you go.
It's pretty deep.
That's pretty deep. All right. We got to thank our patrons. And I'm going to flip open our list here, and let's get us some nice patron thanking. Now, I got to thank we've gotten several new ones. We've gotten several new patrons over the course of the season, and especially during the build up to and during our weekend in Auburn. And you guys, really, I appreciate it. You came through. We're up to like 74 patrons now, and I'm telling you right now, if we get to 100 patrons by the end of the season, of course, by the end of the season, we may start losing people again if they're frustrated, and that's always the fear, right? But if we can get up to 100 patrons, we will do something special. I'm not sure what it'll be yet, but we will do something special in addition to the big documentary show coming up. There's one person left I got to interview. John is on it. John knows who it is. And when I get that person, we get that squared away, the patrons are going to get a couple of weeks to listen to the first episode while I'm working on episode two in the editing room. And then we'll get it out to the general public. So patrons always get bonuses, and that's one of them. So without further ado, let me thank. And again, well, I didn't say, and if you want to join our family and help us out, just go to www.auwishbone.com. Again, I think you need the www's or it'll say there's no page. But if you go to www.auwishbone.com or just go to patreon.com and search for my name. These are the people that have already done that. We've got Brendan O'Dwyer. Thank you so much, Brendan. You are the man. We've got Christopher Burleson. Oh, wrong button. Hold on. Technical difficulties. Oh, no. Let me try that again. There we go. All right. And then we've got Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, Brandon Sisson, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, who's awesome, and we need to get you on the show, Richard. I know you're listening. We're going to get you on the show. We're going to find a way because you have interesting stories to tell, and the people need to hear them. Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk. Hey, this is my first time to say her name since we talked to her, and she told me how to pronounce it. Anne Kangian. God, I hope I got that right. I was saying con, she says more can, so Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Arlen, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrecht, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vijakana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell. We got to meet quite a few of these people over the weekend, John. Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrecht, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medinas, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, who I just sent some books to, he ordered them, Michael Morton, and Lawrence Kane. And also, two or three of those people also kind of upped their contribution, which is awesome, and we really appreciate it. So Very, very cool of all of you, and we need more, and so you help pay our bills and keep us on the air. www.auwishbone.com. All right, there we go. Back to the show. So now I think it's, let's see where I'm going to have to, I have everything.
Time to talk about Mississippi State.
Yeah, Mississippi State. So I need the dog sound effects for that. So you're going to have to get through the "you lied to me."
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
There's the dogs of Mississippi State. One of the most agonizing 3.5 hours
I'll be here any minute.
They will, yeah, on Saturday. One of the most agonizing 3.5 hours I ever spent was 2000 sitting in that stadium while Jackie Sherrill beat us in 2000, and they played Who Let the Dogs Out after like every play for 3 hours. Oh, I wanted to kill myself, John.
I've been to Starkville for a game or two. So.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm aware.
So, but yeah, it was awesome to see everybody for the Arkansas game in Auburn, and we got to meet a lot of the people here. We had a beer with a few of them. They came to the set. A few asked questions. It's on YouTube now if you haven't seen it, on our AU Wishbone TV on YouTube. So, all right, let's talk about Mississippi State real quick. I was told I was supposed to be scared of them. I don't really think I'm scared of them. Am I wrong?
I do. I mean, and I said before the season, I really like Joe Moorhead as a head coach. I think in the long run, they're going to be fine. I think they have lost two games in a row where they scored 7 points or less.
Yeah.
Against Kentucky and Florida.
I'm not scared.
I think in particular, no, you should not be super scared of them right now. I think they're a good team, but stop me if you've heard this before. They're a team with some real offensive struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not bad on defense. But I think the game last week was an incredibly emotional game for them. Yeah. It was the equivalent of the Tuberville going back to Ole Miss game.
That's what I was thinking, yes.
And I think they had kind of worked themselves into a frenzy for Dan Mullen. And they lost. And so I think, the two losses in a row, combined with the losing to Mullen and how emotional that must have been, I think there's a danger that, psychologically they're kind of on the ropes.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not nearly as focused and confident as they were a couple weeks ago.
We could administer the coup de grace, perhaps.
It may be. I mean, the problems they have are ones that we knew about and that it doesn't matter who the coach is. The reality is the quarterback is a good runner. He's a big guy who's good at running straight ahead. He is not a good passer. And you basically dare them to pass.
There's been some talk of them switching out to their backup quarterback. He's been doing so poorly.
I think it's something they will consider. Even this game, I think the other guy is he's a leader, and that I think against lesser teams, he allows them to be very effective. But against the good SEC teams, that's not going to work. And some of it is that they've had plays here and there, and they just couldn't execute them. He had a play last week against Florida. We had a receiver wide open in the field, and he just missed him. I think their offense in particular, it is exactly what we need this week, because they want to run the ball, power the ball straight ahead. They can't do the kind of carve you up passing thing that we've seen from teams cause problems for us. They want to be physical and run the ball straight at us, and I'll take that any day of the week with this defense. So, I do not think Mississippi State is going to score a lot of points against us.
Yeah, I don't either. I feel like it could be – it has the potential to be another game like the one we just saw with Florida, low scoring, or to freak people out even more. How about 10 years ago, right, the 2008 game, the 3-2?
I don't think it's going to be that low.
No, I don't either. Can you imagine Gus coaching a 3-2 game? Good Lord. That's just – I can't even imagine such a thing.
But at the other piece is, again, like, our special teams have been much better this year.
That's been our key a lot of the time.
It has. And I think, you know, I think you look at some of the special teams rankings in different places, and I think actually they're counting off because we've let Carlson take so many, like, 54-yard field goals and miss them. I think if we hadn't done that, we'd probably be in the top three or four in the country in special teams. The punting's been really good. Mm-hmm. Sipos has done a good job. The punt returns have been excellent.
Yes.
We're not letting anybody return a kickoff against us. So I think, I mean, we blocked kicks, you know. So I think the special teams have been outstanding, and Mississippi State is bad on special teams. So my feeling is, like, win, you know, stop the run, win on defense, win on special teams, and just go over there on offense and don't lose it. Like, don't turn it over, don't screw it up, you know, find two or three things that work. And when the defense or special teams give us the ball on a short field, get a touchdown, you know, let's get to 10 or 13 points and get out of there.
I like it. All right. I feel pretty good about this game. I feel isn't it weird to say I feel much worse about our team than I did at the beginning of the season, and yet I feel much better about this game than I did at the beginning of the season?
Yes, because Mississippi State has shown to be mortal, especially offensively. And they've been through a tough meat grinder here. So.
Yeah, and it's about to get worse. All right, I'm going to push the button.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Mira was cracking up because she said, I don't sound like that anymore. You got to see her live. If you haven't seen it, if you watch the video, I know that, I put the audio feed up as this past week's show since we went to all the trouble of recording it. I wanted more than, you know, we had about 300 people watch it initially on YouTube, and that was cool. And we had like 100 and something watch it live or whatever. But I wanted, you know, people to get to more than that don't watch YouTube, because it seems like for every video we do that gets, you know, let me put it this way, for every audio we do that gets 1,000 downloads, we get about 200 video watches. And so basically our audience is about 5-1 podcast listeners versus YouTube watchers. I don't know why that is. It seems kind of odd to me, and honestly, it seems kind of backwards, but we get about 5 times more audio listeners than video watchers. It's one of the reasons we haven't really been doing that many videos. If it was the other way around, we would be all over YouTube, believe me. But I put it up as the audio, but if you haven't seen it, you get to see Mira peek out and do her little bit on the video. So let's see. What do we have for listener questions this week, John?
All right, first question is from Albert Elvis.
What does our executive video producer have to say?
He says, Dear John and Van, please tell me we have a lot of opponents on the schedule to start 150-pound defensive linemen recovering from double ACL surgery. It's not that I'm worried about our offense. I'm just a big fan of plucky, feel-good comeback stories.
Yeah. Oh, man, I wish. I mean, I feel like those games are now behind us, and we're about to get into the ones that, except for Liberty. I mean, you know, I think it was it Patrick Henry that summed up how we look at the rest of this season? I think it was Patrick Henry that summed up the remainder of Auburn's season. I'll leave it at that. Give me Liberty or give me the SEC West. Okay, good.
We play Liberty.
That's what I mean. Give me Liberty you know what the rest of them are going to be. So,
the next question is from Steven, who says, and I've heard this from other people too. Question for the Wishbone. Realistically, how bad do you think this season could get?
Yeah.
Is there any way conceivable the defense could keep this team competitive down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, look, the question right now, let me bring up the schedule. All right, I'm bringing up the schedule. The question right now is, I hope no video thing pops up on here. I apologize if it does. The question right now is, because I think we'll beat Mississippi State. We should beat Tennessee. I feel like with our defense, we should beat Ole Miss. So right, and we'll beat Liberty. So that's 4 more wins. So we're looking at 8 at least. To me, the basement right now, I know that some people think the basement right now is like six or something ridiculous, but I think the
I'm sorry, you know, we're wrong.
You know how Auburn fans are. If we lose one game by 1 point, suddenly everything's falling apart and we're 5-5 or 6-6 and fire the coach and whatever. But I feel like right now our basement, unless things go even worse than they are now, our basement is 8-4, okay? So the question remains, can we beat Texas A&M, and what kind of A&M team is it that's coming into Jordan-Hare? Bearing in mind, we thought this was the year that the away game curse, or the home game curse, the away game win, we were sure it was going to get broken this year. But, of course, now you kind of have to think, well, this could be holding true to form the way we're playing right now. And so, honestly, I think that we could lose to A&M and be 8-4, or we could beat A&M and be 9-3. But right now, for me, our basement and our ceiling are both within one game of each other, and the rubber game is A&M. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I think we're going to have to get dramatically better before we have any concept of beating Georgia or Alabama on the road.
I'm not even entertaining that thought.
Yeah. We got to get something dramatic and insane has to happen on offense before we can have that conversation. But no, I think we can beat Texas A&M and Jordan-Hare with this defense. So, I watched a lot of their game against Arkansas on Saturday, and they're okay. But, you know, that's.
Yeah. Next issue.
But I think the other part of your point was good, that the ceiling of this team is not 10, 11, 12 wins. It is nine, I think. So, Carl Von Drunker has said, Arkansas's defense against A&M made me feel a little better about the Auburn offensive performance against Pig Suey. Not much, but some. He says, right. Silver lining. So I wanted to point this out for everybody. The week before they played Arkansas, Texas A&M played Alabama, okay? So here's what happened. Texas A&M against Alabama, they had 72 plays for 393 yards. Texas A&M against Arkansas, they had 72 plays for 377 yards.
Wow.
So, and I looked this morning, I referenced those advanced stats earlier. I looked at those, and you know where Arkansas's defense is? 35th in the country. 37th, I'm sorry. 37th in the country out of 120 teams or whatever. So I was mistaken. I was wrong. They are not terrible on defense. And after watching against us and against A&M, that's how it is. They're okay on defense. They're pretty good.
I'm shocked. I'm really – that's – but, I mean, they seem like they were not as bad as –
But I want to just use this again. On the advanced stats level, again, there's like 120 teams in college football. Here's the ranking of the teams we have played, okay? The defenses. Washington, number 2. LSU, number 15. Arkansas, 37. Southern Miss, 30. Okay? That's the teams we have played.
What was Washington? Right.
Washington is number 2. They're number 2 behind us. We're number 1. They're number 2.
Wow.
So, I mean, the fact that we struggled against them or LSU is not insane. Okay, but Mississippi State's good. They're ranked 12th, so they're about like LSU. We should expect that kind of defense. But listen to these. I'm going to just throw these out here before we – in the softer part of the schedule. Tennessee, 91. Ole Miss, 113. Texas A&M, 43. Right. So worse than Southern Miss or Arkansas, okay, on defense. And Georgia, 20. Okay, so worse than
Washington,
LSU, Mississippi State, Washington. So I think what I'm trying to say there is if we get past Mississippi State, we have a couple of games coming up where maybe the offense could get its legs under it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Next question from Wynn Carroll. What are the similarities and differences between this Southern Miss game and Mercer last year? Cause for more panic? Less panic or just the usual panic?
Well, I was more concerned when we struggled with Mercer, and that was self-inflicted wounds. I mean, Southern Mississippi, I respect them, and I always have. I mean, maybe I'm misguided to think so, but I've always thought of them as a pretty decent program. They're not, I mean, I've always thought of them as a step up from the Louisiana directional schools. You know, they're, again, yep. You know, I think back to the day when they used to be the best team in Mississippi, better than Ole Miss or Mississippi State, you know, when we were around, when we were back in our day, so... they may not be now, but they're not bad by any means. So, and I remember, I said before this game that this was going to be a. Remember, I said this was going to be a tough game.
And no, I mean, I think it's a good question about the Mercer game. I think they did some stuff, and again, I think we did what I referenced earlier. We had some good offensive stuff that we were saving for the SEC teams, and we didn't run it against them. And I think it came back to bite us in the rear end. So, Logan Shilton says, do you think we can make it? And we just kind of did this, but he said, do you think we can make it through October unscathed? And will that be enough time to figure out the problems? The competition look like they're so good.
Well, October is like, we've got Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. So yes, I think we'll go 3-0 in October. And then we're off on the 27th. We welcome A&M on November 3rd. So I'm predicting 3-0 for October, but we'll see. Two of those are away from home, though, but they're in Mississippi, so we'll see.
All right.
Tennessee game is 11 o'clock Jefferson Pilot game, by the way, even though there's no longer Jefferson Pilot.
Not a big fan of that, but it's what it is.
It is.
All right. Next question comes from email this at auwishbone@gmail.com. It comes from Brendan O'Dwyer, who says, I'm writing this email with 6.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I think I finally turned the corner on Gus. 67% winning percentage is not enough. Our offense looks inept, and the O-line has been subpar for 2 years. I don't believe Gus will be fired this year, but the team this year and last year are poor at best. I understand that we played two amazing games last year, but our season shouldn't hinge on the hope we play amazing.
Yeah.
I usually fall back on your stance of who can we get that's better? That's the question. Until then, Auburn looks competent, can you add a new segment called Who Would Coach at Auburn? you could use the match game theme song. Thanks for being my Auburn vent. Love all that you do, Brendan O'Dwyer.
Well, I'm writing that down. I think it's good. I actually saw this come back up again. By the way, we appreciate that, Brendan. And I don't entirely disagree. Our listeners all know that I've very wildly fluctuated on this whole question for like the last 3 years. I've agonized on it like Hamlet. I'm like Poldark trying to decide if he's going to run for office. That's an inside joke for Poldark listeners, all one of you out there probably, viewers. No, there was somebody talking about that, saying that in 2012-13, when we hired Gus, there was probably nobody better that we could get. And they were even saying that we offered – I knew that we were flirting with what's his name that went to Georgia?
Kirby.
And Kirby ended up staying at Alabama. They were saying we also offered Muschamp, and Muschamp turned us down back then.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I don't know about that. But they were saying, you know, because remember it was like Gus and the other big name then, quote-unquote, was Petrino. Which, thank God, we didn't, as I said back then, and I continue to say, we didn't do that. But they were saying that we could probably do better now than we could back then. So, I agree, though, there's no way we're getting rid of him anytime in the next year or two. We would have to go like 0-12.
And even if we go 0-12, we fired him tomorrow, we owe him $30 million, and that is not happening.
Yeah.
There is no magic pot of money. So, yeah. I mean, I think like this is a. I'm not there. Okay.
No.
I'm not close to there. But I think if you are an Auburn fan who is close to there, this is my advice for you. Take a deep breath and get over it for a while. You know, and if it bothers you so much, like I don't know what to tell you. Do something else or something, because Gus is going to be the Auburn coach this year and next year and probably the year after that.
Yep.
So
if
the thought of that, you know, just fills you with horror or whatever, then all I can tell you is you're going to have to come to some level of acceptance or do something else, because it's how it's going to be. And I get it, people. But also, I'm sorry. Like, I disagree with Brendan about one thing. It's like, look, we beat the two number one teams in, you know, the end of last season, and the, you know, our last three games or whatever, we played two number one teams and we beat both of them. Okay. It wasn't like those were not, you know, kick six, you know, miracle at the end of the game kind of situations either. We kicked their ass.
Yes.
Okay.
We did.
We kicked Georgia's and Alabama's ass last year. And that was the two teams in the title game. And Gus was the coach of that game. And Lindsey was the offensive coordinator for those games. And we had good game plans. We had the same, you know, same kind of talent we have on this team. And we did it. So, like, I don't want to hear, like, that, oh, he's a complete idiot today. Like, we beat Alabama last year. We beat Georgia, okay?
Yep.
That's what we wanted, and we did it. Now, I get it. He was going to say, oh, we didn't beat Georgia the second time. Well, Kerryon was hurt. And Kerryon was the best offensive player in the league, and he was hurt in that game.
Yeah. When our pieces come together is the thing. It's just that we can't always – and that's what we've talked about forever and ever, is that we just seem to have – even when we do have all the pieces working, we don't seem to have a backup, you know. And so if we lose our quarterback or if we lose our running back, we're like, oh, well, we're going to lose the game. And there went the playoffs. There went the SEC championship. It's just frustrating that we seem to always get in this position where if everything is working right, we're a top team. But you can't trust that everything is going to work right for 13, 14 games. You just can't. It doesn't. It never does.
But it also, it doesn't work that way for anybody else in college football either. So it's okay.
Well, I mean, there's a few, though. The most elite teams, and we're a step below them, honestly. The most elite teams, even when they do lose somebody, they've got three more. They can just plug right in and it all works smoothly. You know who I'm talking about. There's several. So, you know, for us to be in 2013, everybody stayed healthy. We didn't really lose anybody critical. In 2010, everybody stayed healthy. I mean, you know, in a typical Auburn year, honestly, in 2010, Cam gets hurt and misses two or three games, including like the national championship game. I'm still shocked that he made it all the way through all 14 games that year, just because our evil luck is so evil. You know, I'm still shocked that Trey Mason and Nick Marshall made it as healthy as they did through all of 2013, and you see what happens when they do. It's just you can't count on that happening every year. Kerryon got hurt. Petway got hurt. Sean White got hurt, you know. Jeremy didn't work out. It's, these things happen every year, it seems like. And it's always that one player we most need that we lose before the season's over, and it goes crap. You know, we talked about how almost every year under Gus, we have been a playoff contender. And in November, and then somewhere in the middle of November, something goes wrong. A wheel falls off every time. It's not coaching. It's not scheme. It's that somebody important can't continue.
Well, that's recruiting and development.
Yeah. Well,
so I...
And our evil luck. I blame our evil luck. I blame Satan.
That's fair.
I blame the devil.
All right. Last question from Rusty Owens, who says, assuming the offensive line continues to have issues, would it be right to judge Gus as a good head coach by this criteria, whether or not he allows Chip to modify the offense to play to our strengths, like has been mentioned here before, allow this team to pass first instead of run first offense?
I think the jury is still out on what Gus allows Chip to do and not do. I'm honestly not sure. What do you think? How do you see that?
I mean, I think this is a good – Rusty's asking a good question. Like we talked about earlier, the strength of the team is the receivers. With the solution is to go towards more of what you were saying and not – I mean, we cannot go back to trying to win the way we won last year, basically – because none of those guys are Kerryon and the offensive line isn't as good and we're going to fail. We have to do things differently. And so I think it's a question of how, you know, can Gus step back and win a different way? And that'd be interesting to watch. I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, that's all the questions?
That's it.
All right.
A trip around the FTC.
Well, very quickly, Georgia did to Tennessee about what we would expect, right?
Yeah, Tennessee hung around for a while, and then Georgia finished them off.
It just must really suck to be a Tennessee fan. It's like, okay, you can have the 1998 national championship, and for the next 20 years, you will mostly suck. Congratulations, Tennessee. Let's see. Florida beat Mississippi State. We talked about that game already, 13-6. I didn't really get to watch much of that. Was it just a slog?
100% a slog. Defenses kind of controlled it, and I think, neither team did a whole lot, but Florida was a little bit better, so.
Usually in a score like that, it means that at some point there was a pick six or a fumble in the end zone, and that was the big difference, you know?
Yeah, it was really just kind of two teams that can only move the ball in the middle of the field, really. So.
Wow, it needed to be played in the mud. A&M, we talked about beat Arkansas, and you said that Arkansas looked fairly, competitive.
And they did, and A&M, solid but not great.
A&M didn't have the special teams triumph that we did against Arkansas, I guess. So that's a good
actually sign. I think they did too. I think they may have had a kick return in this game or something. I have to go back and look, but okay. Yeah.
Alabama beat Louisiana, as the kids call them today. Although we call them ULAF, UL-LAF, ULAF. I have a new sound effect for Alabama fans. Are you ready? It comes from Poldark.
Okay.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but believe me, they would not dare take things further.
What are we calling Alabama fans?
The Vulgars are full.
What are they full of?
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's for all you one Poldark listeners out there. We got a new Alabama fan sound effect.
The Venn diagram of people listen to our podcast and our Poldark fans. You can please tweet Van and I so we know.
I think there's a bunch.
I don't have facts to back this up.
But
I've never watched the show, so I don't know.
It's really good. He's my choice for the next James Bond. So let's see. Vanderbilt, as we all know, as we didn't want to know, but we all know, Vanderbilt beat Tennessee State 31-27. And Kentucky, John, Kentucky. They're not so sucky Kentucky. They're not the Mildcats. They had some white meat chicken for lunch on Saturday.
They took it to South Carolina.
Kentucky looks good. They're undefeated. They're playing for second in the SEC East right now, and I would pay actual American cash money to see them win the East. I would love that so much.
You wait until we get to this week's games. We're going to talk about them again. Right.
Well, and then LSU beat Ole Miss. I'm assuming by 45-16 means that Ole Miss just has no defense in LSU, because LSU scored 45 on them. I mean, LSU's
Ole Miss's defense is abysmally bad.
Yeah, because LSU's offense isn't that good. So if they scored 45, it must be bad. I mean, again, this is a team that – Ole Miss is a team that – that gave up like 42 to Southern Illinois.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, next, this coming week, Alabama, Arkansas, which some years is a good game, and then there's this year. I'm expecting it'll be like 56-3. So, okay. Yeah. Missouri at South Carolina. That's always an interesting game. It's like two teams kind of middle, on a scale of 1 to 10, I have them both about a 4 right now, which is way lower than I expected South Carolina to be. I got to tell you, the chickens have really come home to roost. Yeah, that's the – but they've really let me down this year and everybody else. I mean, I honestly thought, that they had something working there, and they've turned out to not be extra crispy. This is the original recipe right here. Yeah, so these are nuggets. How's Missouri? I haven't seen anything about Missouri this year. Somehow they've just completely gone under my radar. Are they as good as we thought? How's old Dooley
working
out?
They're okay. Good quarterback, but again, who's their offensive coordinator?
Exactly. That's why I'm asking. They got Derek Dooley. You heard me talking about Tennessee the last 20 years a minute ago.
They got a good. The quarterback's good. They have a couple of decent deep receivers, but yeah, the rest of the team is blah.
So who's going to win?
Probably Missouri.
Wow. Man, Carolina, it's going south. They're putting the south in South Carolina. All right, another game that used to be a marquee matchup, LSU at Florida. Now, that's going to be interesting because Florida's scrappy. They're not good. They're not really what you'd call a good football team. But at home in the swamp, they've played some really epic games against LSU over the years. LSU is not great. Right now I got this a push. What do you think about LSU Florida?
I think LSU's going to win. I think Florida's good, but they're not really good or excellent, I think. And I think LSU could go in there and shut them down and score enough points to win. But it'll be an ugly LSU Florida kind of win, 14-13 or
I expect
13-10, something like that.
I expect LSU should win. Like LSU should win this game like 24-6, but they won't. But they should win. Ooh, Kentucky at Texas A&M. Now, this is a ball game, and what it does is makes me want to revive the neglected
My Cold Dead Hands
Lock of the Week.
I haven't dragged that out in a long time and dusted it off. I've been kind of forgetting about it, honestly, and nobody's reminded me, so I assume nobody's missed it. But I'm going to go ahead and say Kentucky locks up on Texas A&M. I mean, locks them up. Locks them up.
Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
And it's named Benny Snell, Jr., or whatever.
I am also all in on Kentucky here. But I think he gets all the hype, but their defense is really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And I think they're going to give Texas A&M all kinds of problems their defense.
Never thought I'd be saying it. Vanderbilt at Georgia. I mean, Vandy teases us, but there's no way, right?
No.
And then Louisiana Monroe at Ole Miss. Monroe got a chance here?
No, but it'll be like 60-30.
Louisiana Monroe will score. Put it this way: Louisiana Monroe will score more points in this game than all their other games against Division I, Power Five, if they have any other games combined this year. And they'll still lose. And they'll still lose by 30. Sound right?
Fair.
All right.
Very fair.
Whew. This was a long one. We had a lot to talk about.
Marathon.
Well, we had to talk about Arkansas. We had to talk about Southern Miss. We had to talk about Mississippi State. A lot of Mississippi in this game, in this show. A lot of Mississippi in this show. But we also had to talk about the whole offense thing, right? And so we just had a lot to cover. But you get your money's worth. With our show, and we hope that you will contribute to that. But I think we've reached the end. Any final thoughts, John, now that we're back into the Palatial Studios and away from the loveliest village after a wonderful trip?
I think the dangerous scenario for Auburn this weekend is that, you know, Mississippi State's defensive line is very good, is that they dominate Auburn's offensive line so badly that we cannot do anything on offense all day. Mm. And then we literally are like, you know, having to hope for an interception return or a punt block or something to win the game. Like that's is really a chance that this game is like, you know, it really is. It could be like 6-3.
Oh, don't.
I'm not there, but I'm not talking about win the line of scrimmage when our offensive line is out there, but just not lose it,
right.
Not be
egregiously
blown off the field. Yeah. That's it. Then I think we'll be okay.
All right. I feel good. I feel like we're going to win. I'm going to say we win something like 20 to 13 or something like that, because we'll give up more points than they've scored the last couple of weeks. But we'll, but I think we'll win. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for this week. www.auwishbone.com. John, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.